Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Thanks very much, Karen. Well, we're experiencing some high temperatures here at the moment, but is nothing compared to the soaring temperatures across Europe. A broad high pressure system is sweeping a warm air mass across the continent, leading to above average temperatures, while strong winds are fueling wildfires. And as cities continue to swelter, how can we future-proof them to make them more livable? Well, in a moment, we'll get to that long-term issue with an expert. But first to Greece, where 600 ground crews and nearly 30 water bombing aircraft have been deployed to tackle hundreds of wildfires across that country. Helena Smith is Athens correspondent with The Guardian. Good morning to you, Helena.
Good morning.
What are conditions like where you are today?
Well, we have good news in the sense that the fires that were raging out of control on tourist islands such as Zakynthos and Kefalonia have now been brought under control. They appear to be receding, and firefighters are now dealing with scattered outbreaks in both of those locations. The real problem today, again, we have very high winds that have fanned these infernos literally nationwide, is Patras, Greece's third largest city to the west of the country, where flames literally lapped up, licked the outskirts of the city late last night. And there are still scattered outbreaks that firefighters backed by aerial support and volunteers are trying desperately to contain as we speak.
And the logistical effort to keep people safe, Helena, there have been evacuations from the tourist islands. Are you looking at the same in the west of the country?
Absolutely. I mean, those tourist islands are, in fact, in the west of the country, in the Ionian Sea. And then, of course, there's Patras, which, as I said earlier, is Greece's third biggest city. And we've seen mass evacuations from the outer suburbs of Patras, from, an old people's home, an orphanage, and several outlying villages that are popular with tourists. They've all been evacuated. We're talking about thousands of people. And then, of course, on the other side of the country, in the northeastern Aegean, on the island of Chios, we've had mass evacuations too, as massive fires, very, very destructive fires, have once again, 2 months after the last round of fires, broken out and caused absolute destruction on that island too.
It's a huge effort, Helena, it sounds like, when you think of, the scale of what's required, evacuating people on islands, aircraft being deployed to put things out. It seems to be a real national mobilisation, is it?
It is indeed. And you mentioned earlier that there were 30 aircraft. That was, in fact, on Tuesday. Yesterday, there were almost double that number of water bombing planes and helicopters. Greece has also sought the assistance of its fellow EU allies to send in help in the form of aerial support. And, it becomes an almost annual ritual, this, a very sad ritual, with very brave volunteers, with the Hellenic Red Cross and firefighters helping the firefighting force douse these flames, often deliberately lit. And we haven't spoken about the latest developments, which is that three people have been arrested on suspicion of deliberately starting these fires in the west of Greece that have, as you say, been so destructive. I mean, in Patras yesterday, an entire hospital had to be evacuated to another part of Greece. These are people, in dire health conditions. So very, very, very serious.
I mean, the prospect of these being started by arson must leave Greeks both confused and angry, Helena.
Yes, and it would seem that they're young people. There was one older man who, in fact, had been arrested, 59-year-old, and charged with arson previously in the northern city of Prevesa, which has also been hit by devastating fires this week. And two young boys, for example, a 19-year-old who has confessed to igniting a fire outside of Patras, with a 27-year-old who has denied all charges thus far. But there does seem to be police are saying that they have photographic evidence of this and witness statements to the effect. And as I said, the 19-year-old has actually confessed to doing this. Now the centre-right government senior minister in it, the health minister, has come out saying this morning saying there should be exemplary punishment of arsonists. They should receive 20-year sentences, so that they realise just what is at stake when they do this by putting the country in such commotion and chaos.
Finally and briefly, Helena, the reports of injuries or people being treated for smoke inhalation, what kind of human effect have these fires had, apart from the obvious people being discommoded and by being evacuated?
Well, I mean, as you say, yes, thousands have been evacuated. Evacuation centres for those in need have been set up around the country. People have been, we don't really know the numbers, but it's definitely in the hundreds, have been hospitalised with respiratory problems as a result of smoke inhalation. Apparently, the air and atmosphere around Patras, where these fires have been burning for almost 3 days now, is really dreadful. And, you know, I mean, you feel really quite sick when you inhale that sort of air. And then, of course, we've had a number, scores of firefighters who have sustained injuries in the form of burns and a heat stroke, apparently. So, you know, it's been a very tough 3 days here in Greece, as it has been in Spain as well, where forest fires have erupted this week.
Helena Smith, Athens correspondent with The Guardian, thanks very much for that. You mentioned Spain there. That's where we're going next. Isabel Moreno is a meteorologist based in Madrid. Good morning to you, Isabel.
Hi, good morning.
There have been record temperatures across Spain this month. What's it like where you are today?
Right now in Madrid, temperature outside is right 25 degrees, but we expect to reach 37 today. But tomorrow there will be 38, and during the weekend we are going to reach 40 degrees.
So hot at the moment in August, and you have seen very high temperatures also in June.
That's it. We are not only having high temperatures in August, but we had an incredible hot June. Last June, just to imagine, was comparable to a hot July or a hot August. I mean, we had temperatures that would have been high even for a July or an August in Spain. So you can imagine how was June here in Spain.
And what are authorities telling people about staying cool and safe in this kind of heat?
Well, you know that here in Spain we are more or less used to have this kind of temperatures. Not these high temperatures. Just to imagine how hot it is right now here in Madrid. I was telling before that we expect 40 degrees this weekend, but the average temperatures for this moment of the year in Madrid should be 32 or 33 degrees. So we are talking about really, really high temperatures. And even if in Spain we are used to high temperatures, high temperatures are very, very dangerous for us too. But however, we know how to manage this kind of temperatures. We try to stay in cool places, not going out in the hours when the temperatures are higher during the day, drink a lot of water. And also there are some places where they are so used to have this kind of temperatures that, for example, keep the blinds down during the day. So our houses are in dark during the day, and when the sun goes down, then you put the blinds out up, so you have a little bit of light. Something like that. Yes.
And hopefully the tourists who aren't used to that will heed that advice again as well. Isabel, could you just tell us finally, before we let you go, the wildfires in Spain, what effect have they had?
Oh, Well, right now, as you know, this kind of situation enhances the fire risk and also the severity of the fires. Right now, we have several roads cut. Some people have died because of the fire. And according to the Copernicus data, since 2006, this is the third year with the highest burnt area. I mean, this is the third worst year since 2006, according to Copernicus data. And we have to take in mind that the season has not finished yet. We are going to be with very high temperatures almost until next Monday. And what I have said, the season has not finished yet.
And Galicia, the main area badly affected by this, is it?
The worst fire, you say, you know, or in general, because I have the general data.
Okay. All right, Isabel Moreno, meteorologist in Madrid. Thanks very much for joining us on that. Now, Gerard Mills is a physical geographer. He's in UCD and he's an expert in the climate of cities. He's on the line too. He's been listening to this. We have systematically, it's been said, Gerald, robbed our cities of shade. And then when a heat wave comes, they become unlivable. Is that the case?
Well, I don't know if I'd describe it as unlivable, but certainly the effect of cities and how we build cities is to accentuate heat, because it's not just shade, but all the materials in the city are designed basically as hard surfaces, so they get rid of water quickly. So that means there's no evaporation really that occurs in cities. And evaporation is one way by which the natural environment cools itself down. So if you're in a city, then you're right, you might have no shade, but often you can get shade from buildings. But the air temperature and the surface is much higher than it otherwise would be, simply because of how we build cities.
All right. We're having a wee bit of a problem with your line, Gerald, but we'll push on for the moment. What can be used to mitigate this in cities? Are you looking for more green areas or different spec of building? What kind of things can be done?
Well, you're absolutely right. There are the two things. If you want to, first of all, I should say most people, when they die of heat, they die actually in their homes. And they often die because the nighttime temperature gets too hot, so people don't get much relief. So you need different types of homes that allow for ventilation. And certainly in the outdoor spaces, you need more green spaces. And you need those spaces to be close to where people live. That means you need more parks, more green spaces, more trees. So there's two types of strategies, one of which is focused on the indoor spaces, which is where people live, and that's where they seek coolness, and the outdoor spaces when people are outdoors. So you need two types of strategies.
In your estimation, in terms of what's being built at the moment, are factors like climate change being taken into account in the building that's ongoing at the moment in order to anticipate maybe temperature rises in our cities in the future?
Well, not surprisingly, what we build mostly is to ensure that we can stay warm during the winter months. But there will be an issue in the future as the climate changes and it does get warmer, as to whether our houses are capable of dealing with increasing temperatures. Now, it's a difficult balance to achieve between wintertime need for heat and the summertime need for cooling. But you need to seek for strategies that would cool the outdoor space so that if, say, for example, you have more ventilation in the indoor spaces, you can bring in the cooler outdoor air. Unfortunately, the way we're going is probably toward increasing separation between the indoor and the outdoor, which will probably mean some form of air conditioning to cool indoor spaces so you're safe if you're indoors, but that doesn't really help the outdoors.
And explain that if you could, Gerald, that separation between the indoor and the outdoor. I mean, you're saying ideally we could bring in outdoor cool air into the indoor, but what are we doing wrong in your estimation then, and what should we be doing?
Well, I think we need to have a more comprehensive examination of the urban environments that we occupy, and that means that maybe we need to count for the outdoor space at the same time as counting for the indoor space. And that would mean effectively more outdoor landscaping to try and cool down the outdoor spaces and to deal with other things, such as, for example, amounts of rainfall and dealing with rainfall that falls on the city surface. So that would make it easier for the buildings themselves to actually achieve some level of comfort. And then from what you heard from our lady Isabel from Madrid, what we mean is changes in our behaviour patterns. So she's talked about very simple things, such as, for example, shutting off the indoor space in the daytime, shading it, to make sure that the space didn't get too warm during the daytime, so it's easier to cool at nighttime.
Okay, maybe we should adopt the siesta as well. Now, thanks very much for that. Okay. Gerald Mills, physical geographer in UCD and an expert in the climates of cities. Now, coming up later in the programme, childhood vaccine uptake has fallen behind pre-pandemic levels. What's behind the drop-off? We'll talk to GP Maura Finn on that. And next, what the Cotswold locals think of US President J.D. Vance's visit.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.